Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this, the 17th of September. Very nice to have you with us. We couldn't be more thrilled to have you here. It is a Thursday morning. It's 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. I stayed up very late last night just watching television, and finally about 1:30 when I completely had lost the will to live, I turned it off. So I wake up this morning and I feel, oh, okay, we're ready to go. Here we go. We'll talk about it and we'll try to resume and feel better about things. That's my mission. Your mission may vary. Let me introduce everybody to you, and then we will get to our wonderful, tell you that you can be a part of the conversation, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and then we will go right now and introduce the group to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is in the house. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm fine, and I get it. I think I hear the ocean in the background. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think we all have a collective shell up to our ear.
Yeah, something's going on.
Yeah, it may be Malcolm, but I'm not positive. I don't want to call out Malcolm.
Whatever it was, it stopped.
All right, that's good.
Likely me.
Okay, that's all right. No, we're not casting blame, just trying to pinpoint the problem.
We're not casting blame.
All right, let us also now go to Vera Carias-Kelly, Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics. Good morning, Vera. How are you?
Good morning. I'm actually feeling so much better now that I listened to the music. It really was uplifting. I was thinking, oh, I'm feeling already better.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. We were trying to at least do it for a few minutes to, you know, overdo some of the other stuff. Counterterrorism expert and bestselling author Malcolm Nance is with us. Good morning, Malcolm. How are you?
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Always a pleasure to have you on this program. We always feel greatly blessed when you are here. Speaking of, Linda Ellerbe joins us, a Peabody and Emmy Award-winning journalist, our dear friend. Good morning, Linda. How are you?
Oh, you don't want to know. I'm where you were last night. The West is still blaming. The government planned to try out a weapon too chancy even to use in war. They wanted to use on protesters. Barr wanted to charge protesters with sedition. The president is pushing an untried vaccination in time for the election. And between the corruption of the president and the post office and human error, the election is going to be screwed up. It's just another Thursday in America in 2020. Help me, someone.
I know. And it all seemed to come washing over. This is apropos to absolutely nothing, but I'm getting ready for a book show that I'm taping later today with the great historical novelist Ken Follett. And Ken is writing about the 900s. I'm scared because there are so many parallels. That frightens me that there are so many parallels. But so there's a lot of places that we can begin, as Linda just indicated. I will tell you that finding a story that is, you know, they're all pretty bad. But let's go to the one that may be the easiest to parse out. President Trump on Wednesday again said widespread distribution of a vaccine against the coronavirus would happen before the end of the year. Now, he's been saying that right along. There's nothing new about that. The only thing new about that is that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention director, Robert Redfield, testified. A hand on a Bible, testifying, saying that a vaccine would not be widely available until mid to late 2021. When pressed on that later in the day, the president said he misspoke. He also said that he misspoke, the president saying that Redfield misspoke when he talked about how masks are important. For his part, thank goodness, we can say what we want to say about the CDC director, Robert Redfield, but he did put out a tweet around 6:45 yesterday saying, no, what I said is what I meant to say. Here is, I think vaccines should be fully fully vetted and should be ready to go on the market. And oh, by the way, I still think a mask in lieu of a vaccine is the best thing we've got. All right. So that is a little bit of what we were dealing with yesterday. It's hard to believe that this virus has been with us since mid to late February as far as being on our collective radar, and we are still arguing over the fact of how people get it. And it is, and as the numbers, I believe the number was 880 or something yesterday of the number of people who died, almost 1,000 the day prior to that, that just seems to be washed under the swept under the rug. I will also say that the president, during his press briefing yesterday, used some of the most bizarre charts I've ever seen in my life, showing that the people who did die weren't really the problem. But did anyone see that? Did you understand that? It was.
No one understood.
No one understood it. Yeah.
I've seen journalists were wondering about these, you know, W-shaped graphs and where they originated. Oh, and by the way, it's all New York State's fault.
Yes. Yeah, it's New York State and the other blue states. And he kept on talking about the people that were dead lived in blue states as if, well, okay, we only lost them. It's not that big of a deal. Alan, let's begin with you.
Well, I don't really have much to say that hasn't been said, you know, already in terms of the questions, and I can't wait to hear from the rest of the panel, you know, on this. However, I will say that one of the things that Redfield said that was, I think we're missing, he sort of mitigated it a little bit at the 6:30 utterance, as you said, Joe. But he did say that right now he thought that the masks were as important or more important than you know, any kind of vaccine.
Yes.
That's extraordinary. And, you know, I think what's happened is this guy has gotten a sense of self. He's doing what he needs to do. And I'm sure he's on somebody's political hit list somewhere. Okay, I'm done.
You know, the one thing, Malcolm, that I found interesting in watching Robert Redfield testify yesterday is much of the time that he was speaking, his eyes were closed.
Well, maybe he was, you know, reaching out to his God and his faith because he was going to need it. By the end of that testimony, it was very clear to me that the White House would be on the phone within minutes. And then Trump comes out and literally tries to put words into Redfield's mouth. My favorite part of Trump's little trick that he has there is that he comes back and he says, well, maybe his team misspoke, or maybe he didn't know.
He didn't understand the question.
He didn't understand the question. Michael Cohen made it clear this is how Trump does his mafia speech. And that when he wants to tell you how to talk, he hints to you through his press conferences and his statements. Redfield was not making a mistake. He is absolutely right. If we were to all wear the mask, the transmission of the virus could decrease as much as 60% almost instantly. If you can't spread the disease dies out. We learned this in, 1918, when everyone wore the mask and they took it very seriously.
1917, I believe, Malcolm.
Well, it took a while before people all wore masks.
No, the president always says the wrong year. That's okay. Go ahead.
But so I wanted to also mention AstraZeneca and Moderna, the two currently leading pharmaceutical corporations who are paying. I mean, the spokespeople were very interesting in the corporate offices in terms of their responses, because they are reframing the narrative to basically explain to the global publics that in AstraZeneca's case, that the adverse effects of the vaccine trial patients that have been experienced indicated that they needed to slow down, look at the problems that emerged before they just restarted the trials in the UK. So they're collecting medical data. They're saying it'll take a while. Moderna also mentioned that they're in late stage phase 3 trials now, and basically said it is not likely that their phase 3 trials will finish and bring results that you can actually replicate and discuss efficacy of the medication until March or even later, such in May. So everybody in the pharmaceutical industry is basically restating the information that Redfield discussed yesterday. Namely, we cannot expect anything on the market that will prevent the dissemination of this virus until the pharmaceuticals corporations have gone through all the trials. And so they're also basically telling the general public, Trump is misinforming you.
Yeah. President or Redfield, when he was testifying yesterday, was saying that the, you know, who would get it first was obviously a question. The president was saying that millions of doses would be ready by election day or shortly thereafter, and everyone is saying, well, there's no way that possibly could happen. And we're not even at that stage where we're ready to go out. As Vera just mentioned, some of the pharmaceutical companies are saying, yes, that we can't put anything out that we don't, you know, obviously our reputation is on the line here. We can't put out anything that isn't right. You think then by Redfield saying that masks would basically, that universal mask wearing could bring the pandemic under control within a few months, that at least that would be something that you could use to say, all right, we have a chance of bringing this under control, perhaps, yes, even by election day, by something that we already have, most of us have, with us at all time. And yet that was dismissed as well by the president. Linda Ellerbe.
Well, he's not going to back down and say, gee, I was wrong about masks. And he's not going to back down and say, no, there is no chance that we're going to have a vaccine in time before the election. He's simply not. I think the rest of us, for our own sanity, look, I had a meltdown this week. And I want to talk about this because I can't be the only one. It started with something small that went wrong in my life, something so small it doesn't bear. But then it morphed into a rage at the universe and tears. And you know, I've got a daughter and granddaughter living in Portland, Oregon. I've got a son who's out of work. I can't support his family right now. I don't have COVID, but the world has COVID. I have been to two Zoom funerals. I am in my seventh month of quarantine, and it all became too much. And I dissolved, and I had to come to find a way back to find my equilibrium and find my sanity. And the first thing I had to do was to remind myself to stop putting a date on when this is going to be over, that I can no longer say over by summer, over by Halloween, over by Thanksgiving, Christmas will be normal, New Year's, none of this. To keep sanity, I just have to say I am completely out of control for most of this. I can wear a mask and do my part, and that's all I can do. And I think it's good for – the reason I wanted to say this is because there are times in this world where it is very important to share the message that you are not crazy and you are not alone.
Right.
And I believe I am not the only person who's had some really bad meltdowns during this occasionally.
Oh, God.
And I needed to hear I'm not alone and I'm not crazy.
The only thing I will, the only thing I'll say, I agree with you 100%. You know, one of the things that I really had to come to, you were saying by Thanksgiving or by Christmas, but for me the big one was by Election Day, that yeah. You hold on to this that at somehow things will change dramatically on Election Day, and that seems more and more to just be a pipe dream as well.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to also say, listening to Linda, it is. it is young people as well who suffering greatly. Yeah. You know, as depending on where you live, but also I'm speaking with my college students on Zoom, and I was just sort of talking to them about how they can't imagine a normal Christmas for themselves if they celebrate that, or next year that their spring will be involving a spring break travel experience. So I'm almost every time I connect with different groups, I speak for a few minutes about how they need to reframe their what they consider normal experiences to something else. And as hard as it is for many of us who have a lot of life experience, imagine that for somebody who's 18, 19 and had all these sort of expectations and hopes, and they get crushed. And now they're worried
my
about going home.
My granddaughter is a senior in high school. Their hopes are crushed. Nevertheless, it is the 19-year-olds who go off to college and say, you know, I'm immortal, I'm 19, let's party.
Yes. Well, I don't think I agree with that, because I have a lot of students who are very concerned about family members with, you know, underlying health conditions.
Well, I don't
conditions.
Mean all of them, but we saw it happen. We saw it happen in North
it
Carolina.
It can happen.
We've seen it happen
in
other places. That comes with the territory of being young. You do think you're immortal.
Yes, it can happen, but I think having regular conversations with young people about where they are in their lives and how they can use this time to productively support their community, support their families, it does make a difference. I think we need to have more conversations about how to be productive and how to actually add to something in your community or to your family, and how you can help rather than just wait it out.
Yeah.
You know, I think you need to give young people some hope that they can be productive members of society, even if they don't pursue all their goals and hopes right now.
Let's take a break when we come back.
For example, my granddaughter, who plans to graduate.
We have half a minute, but go ahead, Linda.
Okay. Plans to take a gap year and to work and help trying to help clean up Oregon after all of these fires. That is a healthy thing that a young person can actually look to planning on doing next year.
Fantastic.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have a wonderful panel: Alan Chartok, Vera Karius-Kelly, Malcolm Nance, and Linda Ellerbe. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll continue with this and other stories after this news break from the BBC. Right after this. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Kate writes, Malcolm was right. Trump is going for herd immunity, or as the president called it the other night, herd mentality. Malcolm predicted that we wouldn't find out about it for years into the future, but it looks like Mr. Trump has spilled the beans. Malcolm.
You know, I tweeted about that yesterday, that, you know, I had predicted several times on this program that there would be these wannabe-type conference documents where they had decided months ago that they would go with a herd immunity policy. And that means that they would just allow 65 to 75% of the nation to get coronavirus in the hopes that a natural immunity would build up through the herd. And that can also be supplemented with vaccines. But, of course, it's a murderous policy. It means they would have to have deliberately decided that 2 to 8 million Americans would die. And lo and behold, Trump just cannot keep his mouth shut. He came out in the ABC town hall and said, you know, that they were looking at herd mentality, which means that he's so ignorant, he didn't even know what herd immunity was. But believe me, this is going to come out. It's going to be horrific, because at some point someone will have said, well, let's just do it this way, consequences be damned.
Clarence writes, Dr. Redfield's positive advice of mask use and that vaccines may not be ready for about 6 to 9 months was helpful and correct. His walking back later was another pressure point from the White House. I don't know if he really walked it back, actually, but he may be fired Friday evening or shortly thereafter. Alan, that's always the concern, right?
Right. Look, this is a guy who likes to fire. He's not only a liar, but he's a fire. You know, we can pretty well expect that anybody who gets in his face will get dismissed. I think he loves that. I think he loves the idea that he's sort of appealing to his right-wing base, that he's not following the usual rules, and he attacks. We had his attorney general yesterday, Barr, going after his own people in the Department of Justice. So that's the way the guy is. So far, it's not working for him. Let's see if it continues that way.
Alan, don't you think that people around Trump who are advising him would say, don't fire Redfield because it's going to create so much uncertainty and worry among the general public that it might be very bad for the electoral outcome?
Maybe so, but we've watched this guy make 1,000 mistakes doing exactly what his people, the opposite of what his people are telling him.
Yeah.
So you really can't put money on the fact that he'll do what is either rational or good. He certainly, I happen to believe the guy is really essentially evil. I think he plays to that part of his character. And does it over and over again. He loves the fact that, put it another way, he's sort of devilish in a way. Get what I mean?
Yes. You know, I to the point of the staff, so many of these reports that you hear Trump is saying about this against the wishes of his staff or against the wishes of those around him or against the wishes of GOP, top levels of the GOP, and that never seems to mean anything, really. I mean, we've heard that for the last 4 years, right, Malcolm? I mean, nothing has changed on that.
No, and you know, Bob Woodward, I don't know if you saw the Morning Joe interview with Bob Woodward the other day, but it was a shocking piece of journalism. And poor Bob Woodward had this look on his face, literally pain, where you could clearly see that Nixon couldn't hold anything up to Trump, that Trump clearly eclipsed Nixon in terms of his lack of empathy, his real hatred for most of the American public, and that he does not live in the same reality that all of us live in. And that was Woodward's words, that he can't tell the difference between the truth and a lie. And he had gotten that from multiple people, including Director of Intelligence Coates, Jim Mattis, the former Secretary of Defense. I mean, this puts us all in grave danger. It's not his staff. His staff are enablers. That's just a theme right. that they whip out literally every time Trump does something that's crazy.
You know, Malcolm, I have a disagreement with you, I think. I think this guy is so evil that he knows exactly when he's telling a lie, and he knows what the response is going to be. So, in other words, to dismiss him as not being able to know the difference between telling a lie and telling the truth, I think is way too easy on him.
But the lying is pathological, don't you think?
Yeah,
it is pathological, but yes. I think we're both right here, Alan, because Woodward also said that Trump is very, very calculating about his pathological lies. But usually he's caught in a trap first. But with his discussions with Jared Kushner, that they say there are very specific, deliberate lies that they put out there to make the press chase the mouse, so to speak, while he's getting away with things.
Well, Woodward was on Lawrence O'Donnell last night as well, and that was one of the things that struck me, that in the precursor to many of these actions is the president turning to someone in the room saying, watch what I'm going to do now.
Exactly, or that it will drive them crazy.
Yeah, it will drive them crazy, that's right. Yeah.
So what we have in addition to all of the things that we have identified and described, I think we also now know because of Woodward and his extensive interviews, is that Trump is the propaganda minister for this entire situation.
Well, for himself, he loves propaganda.
Yes.
But usually
yes.
that propaganda begins because he's a pathological liar. And these lines where, you know, he wants to frame something in a meta narrative that starts with a lie, but then when he's pushed back on, and this is what Woodward said, when you push back on him hard with facts, hard and fast, he gets lost. Then he lies again by making up something completely. And we saw that in the town hall. The Washington Post called it four Pinocchios over and over again.
Yeah, but
yes, and we saw that in the interview regarding the infamous health plan that supposedly the Trump administration is developing and has been developing for 2 years. And every 2 weeks, we're supposed to expect some results and information, and we never get it.
Since 2017. Both Linda and I were talking about, you know, I said I was losing the will to live last night, but it is... You know, it is.
No.
But it is what I think is so for me, and Linda certainly said this much more eloquently. But for me, the feeling that just everywhere you look, it seems to be this chaos and this just horrible things that are happening, whether it be sedition charges or heat rays or the masks or the vaccine, and that's just in one day. And then you and Linda was talking about this of, you know, then you go and you work in your, or I guess it was Vera, then you go and work in your community. But I'm sorry, I go into my community and I see all the Trump flags and I see the banners and I see the and I see the barns that have been painted, and I just sit in the driveway and weep. I don't know how much of that is my own mental deficiencies, or it's just a, or part of the overall plan here to scare us into some sort of submission that will allow us to move forward over the next 4 years. I'm at a loss.
I say this every week because I think it needs reminding. Because we see the Trump flags. I mean, I'm in Columbia County, which is a pretty red county. And I've had my 8-foot Biden banner stolen from my front lawn. I mean, people came pretty far onto my property to destroy my property. But these people are living in a tribalistic society.
Did they know you were a spy?
Trump as their tribal leader. And they don't particularly care what you think. If you see their Trump flag, there's a particular one that says, no, you know, no BS.
Yeah.
Well, it's all about throwing it in your face.
Make liberals cry again.
Yeah,
that's another
they
one.
They don't care about the country. It's the ultimate libertarianism. I got mine, screw you. And so by seeing Trump do that over and over again, they view themselves as rulers of the country. And this, and I will generalize here. Most of them are white males who are lower and lower middle class, and then this level of middle class business class that have, you know, that have all the votes for the Trump parade.
White Christian males. Let's call it for what it is.
Yeah, white Christian males.
White Christian men, and their job is to
don't forget Christian in there, because we have really seen some bad acts towards Jews in our country in the last couple of years.
Absolutely.
So when we say white males, let's throw Christian in there.
Yeah. Well,
so I think in essence, Malcolm.
Hold on. Let Malcolm finish. Then we go.
Yep.
Well, QAnon, for example, which is burning everywhere. I'm at Tapestry, my little micro think tank. We've been trying to track this stuff. It is the protocols of the Elders of Zion conspiracy theory again. It's the Bilderbergs and the Rothschilds. Now the Soroses. It is a anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish conspiracy theory, which Trump is the leader. I mean, it is just dangerous out there in the way these people think. But again, it's a form of insane tribalism that we haven't seen since, the mid-1930s in Germany.
I would agree with Malcolm. I just wanted to say he correctly identified the attitude, which is an ideology to be described as me, myself, and I.
Right. Let's take a break.
And yet...
Go ahead, Linda.
No, I was, and yet so often we see these very same people voting against their own self-interest if you take logic as any part of it. My goodness gracious.
Logic does not apply.
Health care. I mean, yeah. It's, but I think you're right. We have entered a time. Okay, let's just talk for a moment about the heat ray. Okay, we learned yesterday from the whistleblower that the government considered using this thing called a heat ray, okay, which is actually known as an active denial system.
Also referred to as a skin melter.
When you listen to that name, because that's like calling torture an enhanced interrogation technique.
Right.
As best I can understand, this thing is sort of like sort of like a microwave, and it's going to do terrible things to you, and it's going to make your skin scream and hurt, and do all of those things. And I'm sitting last night, I'm reading about this, and I'm thinking, well, you know, by golly, I believe in the Second Amendment, so if I can have an AR-15, why can't I have a heat ray to use against my neighbors to protect my home? I'm an American citizen. I have a right to be a human spreader of the plague. I have a right to roam the streets of American cities and call myself a militia. I have a right to get you sick. I have a right to have an AR-15. How about waterboarding? Don't I have a right to do that too?
Well, let's take a break.
I got to tell you. Go ahead.
Just hold that thought, Malcolm, and I'm going to hold you to it. So really hold that thought, and we will come back in about 1 minute and 18 seconds, and we will continue right after this. Okay, Malcolm Nance, go.
He's going to come now.
Okay. You know, this whole discussion about the heat ray, which came out from a National Guard major, who was senior on-scene military commander and liaison with the Park Service at the protest in Washington. I'm going to tell you what's happening this morning. There are careers ending this morning. That letter that was written by the senior provost marshal, that's the military police, who made a recommendation for using the active denial system, which is a microwave. It's literally a flat arrayed microwave that they point at people that first makes you nauseous, then burns your skin. And this was a system they wouldn't deploy in Iraq, okay? Mm-hmm. A place where they could drop bombs and bullets through you, but it was too inhumane to use on protesters in a foreign combat zone. But this provost marshal requested this. Obviously, the military chain of command did not approve that. General Milley, after those protests went down, and I mention this all the time, made a statement to the entirety of the armed forces that the U.S. Armed Forces serves the Constitution of the United States and does not take part in actions against American citizens. So I'm pretty sure that whoever wrote those requests, they're done. They're done. The military is not on the side of Trump as a person. They are now starting to openly make it clear that they won't follow these unlawful orders anymore.
So then a Defense Department official who is looking at this downplayed DeMarco's allegations, saying that emails about the specific weaponry were routine inventory checks. Oh, yes, we have grenade launchers.
Yeah. Do you have it?
I understood that part. Because they had a request for 7,000 rounds of ammunition. When you're going through a deployment, you do a weapons and ammunition check that is routine. But you have to also remember, when the Tennessee National Guard and the National Guard from, I think, Georgia were going to be deployed, they deployed with full combat load. That's full weaponry, as if they were going to war. That's not normal for the National Guard. And but this, you know, this heat ray gun and making special requests for that, verifying that they use chemical munitions that were equivalent to tear gas and all of that. I'm glad that's all coming out, because people need to understand the military is not really trying to play in this game.
Yeah.
So also, I wanted to say something on.
Okay.
I wanted to say something on. that Trump officials had tried to use the heat ray or ADS system once before. In 2018, Customs and Border Protection officials tried to suggest, with the support of the inner circle of the Trump administration, to use that weapon again to repel migrants from Central America along the U.S.-Mexican border. And then Homeland Security Secretary Nielsen rejected the use of this weapon. And she was no left-wing softie, let me just state that very clearly. And she decided this weapon would be a horrific, horrific weapon to use against women and children and people in desperate need. And it would look terrible, and it would be awful. It would create all kinds of human rights investigations. And she said to never bring up this weapon again. Here it is, domestically.
But how does it even become, you know, yes, let's use the skin melters. That'll do it. Linda, you were saying, I apologize.
Well, yeah, I read last night, and I wanted to know Malcolm's take on this. I read last night that when the federal officials had, you know, explored the use of it and wanted to use it in Washington in Lafayette Square, that apparently they were advised by that the National Guard did not possess one, which raises the question, had they possessed one, would the government then have gone ahead and used it?
That's a great question.
Well, I personally believe that Bill Barr's Justice Department, using their Customs and Border Patrol and Federal Protective Service and federal prisons officers, absolutely would have used it. The National Guard wouldn't have. I mean, I saw a lot of panic in that day around the National Guard, and within 24 hours they were pulled out, certainly because the Defense Department does not want to do this. But in the Trump administration, firmly believed that they wanted to use it against migrants. These people are cruel, cruel. And I'm sorry, every Republican that supports Trump, you are cruel. You don't care about people. You don't care about anyone but yourselves. And collectively, you enjoy seeing people hurt other people who are not like you.
Well,
I'm sorry, the armed forces does not behave like that. And that's why Trump has this, he's underwater. He's like 33% of the military now supports. And that's the young, stupid guys who don't know any better and have never spent any time in the military. But I absolutely believe they would have used this weapon and might use it again.
But it's the weapons, but it's also just the weaponry of words that's being used within the campaign. President Trump, three times yesterday, I believe that number is correct, tweeted and retweeted allegations that that Joe Biden was a pedophile. I mean, I don't know, how low can you go? What point do you think that we're even in a fair fight here? And I know for a lot of times that people blame the media for making it into a horse race, but good Lord, I mean, this just seems to be a slaughter. I understand that. Go ahead, Malcolm.
Well, Trump not only was retweeting this QAnon stuff, but he was practically endorsing the extrajudicial killings of civilians by policemen and by Kyle Rittenhouse, that militia man. I mean, this is getting out of hand. And I've said this before because I detected it a few years ago. The right wing and led by Trump are using what we call in the intelligence community eliminationist rhetoric. This is the kind of phrases and words we saw in collection before the Rwandan massacre and the Bosnia massacre, where they dehumanize the individuals they oppose. They start having these extremist voices, like, I don't know, the Assistant Secretary of Health and Human Services, that crazy conspiracy theorist, Michael Caputo, come out and start telling people that, you know, we're going to civil war, start buying ammunition. Or last week, Roger Stone literally saying that the president should start preparing for civil war and should start killing people. I mean, they are becoming the mainstream in the Republican Party. And once again, I will say it out loud to my Republican brethren on here. because at one point I was a Republican, but you're not anymore. You're Trumpistas. You no longer care about America. You care about Trump. And that means you are willing to destroy the Constitution and see other Americans killed, injured, or hurt for your own pleasure.
You know, one of the things that Michael Caputo said was to buy up the ammunition. From my understanding in the reporting, and a great deal of reporting that's been done on this, not just since his remarks, but even prior, that it, and Malcolm, you would probably know this better than anybody else, unless other panel members are packing heat that I'm not aware of, but you can get ammunition. If you go into a gun store, a legal gun store, it is almost impossible to find ammunition.
No, and the gun prices... Trust me, I'm a big shooter. Gun prices are astronomical now. After Sandy Hook, a typical AR-15 bullet went from 21 cents a round up to about 45 cents a round. And that was like the mass purchase of ammunition, the biggest purchase in American history. In the last 3 months, it's gone up to $1 a bullet. This is crazy. These people are out of their minds. They think they are preparing for the second American Civil War.
Well, I would like to to come in here.
Of course.
And I can't remember who it was. He was a fellow at George Washington University's. And he, in reporting to the House Homeland Security Subcommittee, he said, and I'm going to read this quote, between gun control issues, civil unrest, the stresses placed on the country by a deadly pandemic, conspiracy theories, anti-press sentiments, and a highly divisive population, the nation is one large event away from violence. To which I add, here comes the election.
Mm, right, right.
So I think the words civil war are not out of place in this conversation anymore. They're really not. They're the words none of us wants to say. But they're also the words that we forget that half this nation, when you say, well, how can 40% of the people support these hateful policies of Donald Trump? We like to forget that half this nation went to war to keep the right to own other people.
Let's,
on that note,
I'm gonna pause you, Vera, because we have to take a break. Okay. Ray Graff is ready to go, so we're going to go there. We'll pause. We will go to we welcome your letters. We have a lot of them, and I promise I'll get to them when we come back. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will return. Let's go to letters. We have many of them, and I'd like to get to as many as possible here. Lars writes, well, I woke up in a good mood. Back to reality, I guess. I don't know if I should thank you.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
I'd love to read one, too, from Kathy, who says, please do not profane
Christianity. I was just about to read that one. Go ahead.
Great. By attaching it to white male Trump supporters. To the extent any of them believe in some perverted form of Christianity, they certainly express no Christian values whatsoever. Christianity is uplifting, giving, and based on love. In no way does it describe white male Trump supporters. That's Kathy from Charlemont. And thanks. Great minds think alike, Joe.
Yeah, I don't. Well, okay. I'm just wondering.
They may express Christian values. They're not behaving on them.
Well, right. Exactly.
Well, but I think our point
of Christian values. Boy, I hear it constantly.
Yeah, but I think our point is well taken.
How so?
Well, I think our point is well taken in that we cannot defame a whole group of people.
No, you can't.
Based on what some idiots do, and who try to hijack the religion or whatever. I think we have to be very careful. And I'm the, what, am I the only Jewish guy today? I think we have to be careful.
You're not the only non-Christian here.
No. Well, but the other thing, too,
I didn't say that.
But I'm looking at, I don't know how much I want to get into this, but it's just you look at leaders in the Catholic Church, and we talked about Cardinal Dolan, I don't know. These are people who are Cardinal Dolan spoke at the Republican National Convention. I don't know. I have problems. It doesn't. These are these are very odd things to me, and I think it's difficult to try to figure it out of how someone who who espouses those Christian values would also then be talking about melting people's skin. Or caging children, or ...
Yes, but that doesn't mean, Joe, that all Christians feel that way. They don't.
Well, of course not. Of course not.
I think it's very important.
We are talking about the Christians who also support Trump at the moment. Let's be clear. We all know good Christians. We know people of faith, of all faiths, of many faiths, who have done wonderful things. But there is a meme going around that fits today so much because looks like a family from the 50s. It's a white family, and the child says to the father, "So, if the Bible says if we should help the poor and welcome the foreigner and heal the sick, respect others, not lie, not commit adultery, and not steal, then why do we support Donald Trump?" And Daddy says, "Oh, Billy, we don't actually practice these things. We only preach them." And I'm afraid that there are many of us out here who are looking around, and it seems that a lot of truth in that.
Michael
in
writes...
I'm sorry, Linda, I want to challenge that. In what? There's a lot of truth in what?
In the hypocrisy of saying, "I am a good Christian, but I support Donald Trump." Two things to be compatible.
No, I hear you. But you can take any religion. You can take any with the
Yes, but the Christians are the ones in charge at the moment, Alan. That's what we're talking about.
I'm sorry.
That's like all lives matter. Yeah, but it's the black lives we're talking about at the moment, and it's the Christians in charge here, and they are the ones preaching. Oh, love one another. You can't love one another and support Donald Trump. You can't.
But you can't condemn a whole religion based on what a few
people. I'm not condemning a whole one. I'm condemning the ones that support Trump.
Okay,
and claim to be good Christians. I'm with Malcolm. You can't claim to be a good Christian and support this kind of hatred.
Linda says,
I agree with that.
Michael says, "Hey, Linda, Joe Biden is an old white male and a Christian to boot, and he's the candidate of the Democrats. Go figure."
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not blasting all white Christian males, guys. You are trying to make this like all lives matter, okay? Right now, old white Christian males run things. Let's be clear on that.
Carl writes, "Once we create a new weapon, there will always be a lust by some to use it. They will make up a rationale for themselves, a reason to use it on someone somewhere. Eventually, boys want to play with their toys." We go to Vincent Malcolm. "Can highly reflective Mylar surfaces be used to reflect heat rays back against those deploying the weapon?" Wow, that's a very... Where are we going to carry around Mylar balloons, Malcolm?
Yeah, well, no, it won't work. In fact, it'll heat you up faster. It's like wrapping up chicken in a chicken and then throwing it in a microwave. You'll get the sparks while you're at it. Now, nothing protects against this thing.
Jesse says, "I find myself reading such craziness online that I'm constantly having to fact check." I love this letter because I do this all the time. "It turns out that from heat rays to forced hysterectomies, it's all true. I cannot believe the reality in our country right now. It is sickening." You read things and you think, oh, well, that can't be right. And then it turns out to be right. Larry says, "It seems to me that the USA is printing money and there is no value to it. When reality matches the facts, what will happen?" Will says, "Thank you, Linda and Joe, for talking about the mental health aspects of this terrible Trump era. Trump anxiety disorder is growing leaps and bounds across our country and the world. I'm in my eighth decade, and I never thought I would see such anxiety, depression, and hopelessness spreading amongst my friends and most thinking people in the country." Christine says, "Those big Trump flags are signs of insecurity. They are overcompensating." for some major insecurity. Make up your own joke. Fear works for those people, says Christine. Leslie writes to us, please don't refer to Trump supporters as Christians. They may call themselves such, but they are anything but. I think that's the point we were making. You're no better than Trump. Your ad hominem attacks and group condemnations are repulsive and disgusting. Shame on you.
Well, on that, I would like to say none of us are involved in caging children, beating up peaceful protesters on Lafayette Square, or silencing vast numbers of American citizens.
Or yes, I agree.
Karen writes, what happens to Trump in November when there is no vaccine by October? Does it matter? Malcolm, I mean, it was all supposed to be over by Easter. It was going to be 15 cases by the end of March. I don't know. Does it matter?
Yeah, and just look at how he lies about his health care program. Every 2 weeks for the last 4 years, it's coming. The man's, look, Trump needs to be reframed in a new meta-narrative, and I think Joe Biden will have an opportunity to do that during the debates. And that meta-narrative is quite simple. Pathological liar. Do you want a pathological liar in charge of trying to keep your family safe? Do you want a pathological liar controlling atomic bombs? Do you want a pathological liar determining whether you live or die on the basis of where you live? Right now, 40% of the country says, yeah, no problem.
Matt writes, I saw a Michael Steele interview last night on MSNBC. He was on the 11th hour with Brian Williams. It really was. And Matt writes that I was surprised at his level of frustration. He has great political insights and exhibited something that's starting to show up in articles I've recently been feeling. Talking sense to Trump supporters is hopeless. We've all arrived at our position, so let's get to voting. The next 40-plus days will be horrible, so let's just get through them, you know, kind of like our teenage years.
Michael Steele actually said, the philosophy of Trump supporters is I'm with stupid.
Yes.
And they don't care that they are seen as stupid. They don't care that this will hurt them.
You know, I have to actually say, right now, the atmosphere, the kind of language, the hostility expressed by members of the Trump administration reminds me so much of traveling in the 80s in Latin American dictatorships and in recent years in the Middle East. I mean, the language used by the Turkish dictator Erdogan against minority communities inside of Turkey, such as the Kurds, you could establish a parallel for the kind of propaganda, the hostility, the use of military means to subdue any kind of dissent, the imprisonment or threatening of writers for public dissent, use the sedition charge. I mean, this is such a path, a march towards deep repression in this country if we get this kind of a person in the highest office of the land again.
All right, a couple more letters, and then we'll move on to some other stuff here. Joan says, as a practicing Christian, I have been saying for years that I want my religion back. What is being done and said by the evangelicals does not resemble what Christianity represents. James says, thank you, Linda, for sharing this today. I am a 76-year-old man living in Hudson, and I agree with you 100%. Lynn says, first of all, such a great group today. Secondly, Joe took the words right out of my mouth. I, too, was up quite late last night after an aggravating day trying to Zoom with my 9-year-old and having no success. I was very keyed up and foolishly decided TV was the answer. It was one creepy factoid after another. I have friends who live about 15 miles from me, and sometimes we just text while watching the news. We were each texting so fast, I'm not sure we saw what the other said. Then, like you, I woke up this morning to the whole heat ray nightmare. Are we all terrified yet? Oh, God, yes. Yes. We're terrified. Let's see. And I think that is all I have on those.
Well, Joe, I don't know if you saw Mike Wynn's letter. Mike's letter. I'm sorry about that. White Jewish people for Trump, question mark. I understand your arguments, but I agree with Alan. Look who stands behind and next to Trump and influences these policies. Stephen Miller and Jared Kushner are both Jewish and have heavy influence on Trump policies. As a Jewish American, I'm ashamed of them and their values and a large group of conservative Jews who back Trump. But I understand that they don't speak for all of us. Thanks, Mike from Saratoga Springs. Sorry for using your last name, Mike.
All right. Let's go to some other stuff here. I know Linda has to leave at 10:30, so I want to get some more things in here before we start. My God, we've had this whole conversation, and we haven't talked about sedition charges. Or if we did, we've only talked about them in passing. So yep. Attorney General William Barr was also said to have asked prosecutors to explore whether to bring charges against the mayor of Seattle for allowing a police-free protest zone. William Barr told federal prosecutors in a call last week they should consider charging rioters and others who had committed violent crimes at protest in recent months with sedition. That, according to two people familiar with the call, the highly unusual suggestion to charge people with insurrection against lawful authority alarmed some on the call. This is what we were referring to yesterday or earlier in the program, which included U.S. attorneys around the country, said the people who described Mr. Barr's comments on the condition of anonymity for fear of retribution. The attorney general has also asked prosecutors in the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division to explore whether they could bring criminal charges against the mayor, Jenny Durkin of Seattle, for allowing some residents to establish a police-free protest zone near the city's downtown for weeks this summer. According to two people briefed on the discussion, late Wednesday, a department spokesperson said that Mr. Barr did not direct the Civil Rights Division to explore that idea. Alan, it seems... Go ahead, Malcolm.
Yeah, go ahead, Malcolm.
I actually heard that the Barr Justice Department in the Boston area are looking to retroactively charge these rioters with actually having looted a ship and thrown valuable commodities into the water well over 200 years ago. So, you know, he's only keeping Trump up with his goal of becoming King George IV. All of these charges literally created the American Revolution. I mean, I just, don't they read history books? We founded this nation on insurrection and sedition.
Well, then we had let's not forget that then came 1798, and Adams, President John Adams,
that's
and the
correct,
Sedition
right.
Act, which was
right.
all our own and not done by the British, and that did not work out well. I mean, the notion that was aimed at newspapers and aimed at specific people, and there were 20 newspaper editors arrested, and some were imprisoned. And the most dramatic victim was a congressman from Vermont. He wrote a letter criticizing Adams' unbounded thirst for ridiculous pomp, foolish adulation, and self-avarice. Does that sound familiar, by the way, folks? So. That caused him to have to go to jail. They sent him to jail for his opinions, okay? Wherein his constituents reelected him to Congress from his jail cell, and I'd like to point out the country defeated John Adams and put in Thomas Jefferson in 1800. Now, we've had sedition tried again in this country over and over, but modern legal thought has always been that it interferes with the First Amendment. It conflicts with the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. And here we have a guy who's in perfect lockstep with Trump, who wants to say the president is the law. And if he says it's the law, it's the law. Sedition? You want sedition? Let's have it. Well,
Malcolm's sedition.
Right. You try this stuff, you're going to end up with a revolution eventually.
Sedition of Democrats. In suggesting possible prosecution of Durkin, a Democrat, Barr also took aim at an elected official who President Trump has repeatedly attacked. During his speech on Wednesday night, Mr. Barr noted that the Supreme Court had determined that the executive branch had, quote, virtually unchecked discretion, allow the ice water to fully go through your veins, in deciding whether to prosecute cases. He did not mention Durkin or the sedition statute.
I swear to God, Barr will go to prison someday. If there is any justice in this nation, he will join
is there?
You know, Nixon's attorney
general. I was going to say, big if, a big if.
That's a big if, but you know what? If God's on our side and we can turn out the vote, that man will be in prison next year. He is the most corrupt official. I think he's more corrupt than Nixon. I can't recall Nixon's attorney general right now, the one who did go to prison.
John Mitchell.
But John Mitchell, there you go. And that he is not just enabling, he's reinventing the laws for Trump as an individual. You know, this is a lot less than, you know, than the old Sedition Act. This also reminds me of Argentina in the beginning of the Dirty War, where they started just arbitrarily arresting people. And what comes next? They start torturing you, start putting you on airplanes and throwing you out at 30,000 feet over the ocean to hide it? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised anymore. And I really hate the concept of all of these things popping off as conspiracy theory, but they're literally doing this stuff.
This is a sign of an attempt by Barr to basically help Trump with the idea of establishing the rights one would have in a police state or a military dictatorship such as in Argentina. An act of inciting violence against lawful authority. The lawful authority is defined by Barr, the personal attorney to President Trump. And the mayor of Seattle, Jenny Durkin, can't even decide what happens in her own city. No, it's superseded by the federal authorities who are interpreting the law in a particular way to serve their own interests. It is the actual subversion of our Constitution and our legal system. This is deeply disturbing.
I do want to go to a Bill Barr interview with the Chicago Tribune. The columnist John Cass did the interview 2 days ago. He acknowledged in that interview, Bill Barr did, that yes, I'm not supposed to get into politics, but we are going to find ourselves irrevocably committed to a socialist path if Joe Biden is elected president. I think if Trump loses the election, that will be the case. At various points in the interview, Barr referred to, quote, many people in government working surreptitiously to thwart the administration and said that increasingly Democrats' message appears to be Biden or no peace. The only way this is going to stop is if you put Biden in office. That is rule by the mob, and we're approaching that, Barr said. While Biden has repeatedly denounced violence, Trump has inflamed fears of Antifa violence if Trump is elected. The interview, just the latest in an administration seemingly determined to demolish the line between politics and government. I mean, I think we lose in this whole thing. Not that it matters, I guess, anymore, because nothing does. But yes, an attorney general getting involved in a political election would have at one point been thought to be unheard of.
I'm telling you, this guy's got to go to jail when this is all said and done. This is way beyond over the line. He is openly saying that he is going to go after his opponent. Hey, by the way, I'm going to make a prediction here because I'm pretty good at this about the October surprise. And my belief that the October surprise is that Bill Barr will announce either an investigation or preliminary, you know, indictments against Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. The same thing that Trump got impeached over. These people are shameless, and they will do it.
I have to get off the air. I have to leave now, but I would like to throw in, Malcolm, I want to throw in my prediction for the October surprise. The October surprise is Trump is going to declare, for some outside reason, COVID, whatever, that the election will be postponed. He's going to try to not have the election.
I think
forget
both of ours can happen at
part.
The same time.
He's going to make an attempt to not to postpone the election. And that, of course, means never have it.
Wow. Well, it's, we've had a good 90
Keep
minutes
your
of
eye
uplifting.
Open for something on the COVID front that will just make it, just for some reason, it's like very much like we're going to suspend your payroll tax now. Never mind, there will be no money for Social Security one day if we keep doing this. We're just
How about
doing
a war?
Right now. We're just postponing the election.
You know, Iran is still out there, convenient to Trump.
A war, that would be the perfect excuse. We're just going to have to postpone this election for a little bit till we settle this war. Mm-hmm. Be aware, be scared, be very afraid.
Well, Linda, that seems like perfect words to end with you on this morning because we come full circle of where we began together. But thank
aren't I cheerful? Aren't you glad you had me on this morning?
We are blessed to have you, and I thank you very much for being with us. Linda, thank you very much. We'll let you off the hook.
Hey, Joe, remember what Joe Hill said. Don't mourn for me, organize. Stop mourning, you guys. Get out and do some work.
Absolutely. Well, right. And I
dreamed
know...
I saw him last night, alive as he could be.
Linda, Joe said I.
Linda, thank you very much. I so appreciate
so
it.
So long, everybody.
We're going to continue our conversation. Malcolm Nance, Vericarious Kelly, and Alan Chartok. Of course, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Just in the minute before we have to go over to break, Diane says, your program today is so scary, but necessary. Much appreciated, but destroying my day. My sister moved to Florida a few years ago. She's now a full Trump supporter. Her husband posts things on Facebook, quote, I used to think Trump was a good president, but now I think he's the best president America has ever had. So, so discouraging, writes Diane. We then go to Michael, who says many Christians vote for Trump because he opposes abortion. They see abortion as murder. This issue overrides all others. Those points being made by our listeners this morning. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Alan, Vera, and Malcolm, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And we will continue after this quick break and news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Vericarious Kelly, and Malcolm Nance being with us for our last go-round this morning. And we go to this story over mail voting. The finger-pointing appears to be a preemptive effort to assign blame in the event of election chaos, as a record number of Americans are expected to vote by mail because of the pandemic. The Postal Service postcard urging voters to plan ahead if they intended to vote by mail seemed innocuous enough. I know I got mine on Saturday. But not to Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold, who dispatched her staff to call the Postal Service trying to stop it, a request that was denied, and then sued the agency in an effort to halt its delivery, arguing that the mailer was filled with misinformation that would disenfranchise voters in her state. Such is the toxic state of the relationship between some state and local election administrators in both parties and the Postal Service 6 weeks before Election Day, as officials throughout the country scrambled to prepare for what is expected to be an unprecedented flood of mail-in ballots in this extraordinary pandemic-era election. The feuding suggests a preemptive blame game between the nation's mail delivery urgency and those charged with administering and counting the vote, as the prospect of an operational and political crackup looms in November. Ms. Griswold, a Democrat, said the postal official who told her staff that the mailer could not be stopped had offered to clear up any confusion it might cause via a news conference or an op-ed, but she rejected that idea. There's many places that we can go here, Alan, but it just seems to me, the first thing I looked at when I saw it was, okay, but if it's coming from the Postal Service, it seems that they're telling you that you have to vote early if you want to get your vote in, with the subtext being, there's still a good chance your vote won't get in.
I think that's right. Look, we know it's this simple, that Donald Trump, in his mind, thinks that the Democrats will win if everybody votes by mail, because there are more Democrats and they're more likely to vote by mail, and therefore he is doing everything in his power to put a stop to that. And so everything else is sort of subterfuge. We know that. So he's making his point over and over and over again. And that is a technique known, of course, from the old Marxist days as the big lie. You just say it over and over again.
Right.
Pardon me. And pretty soon people begin to believe it. So so that's what it is. And he's setting it up so that in case it's close or in case he doesn't win, he can say the whole thing was soiled.
Malcolm.
You know, there was a very, very good column the other day that I read in the Washington Post where Trump's strategy is being said very, very clearly and in plain sight that he absolutely has no intention of accepting any result other than his reelection. Any result. So if he doesn't win outright, if there's any obfuscation, there's anything that has to be discussed or votes and ballots that have to be mailed in, he will declare victory, and that any win by Joe Biden will just be nullified. He just doesn't believe that there was any way that it can happen. So he is setting the nation up for essentially, we're back to that phrase, civil war. And this, I think it was Dana Milbank in the Washington Post who said, he's done this three times in the last 72 hours, said no result other than his victory would be considered legitimate, and that we should all be in a panic over that.
Vera? Vera? I think we lost Vera.
She's in a panic over it.
Yeah.
Vera, are you there?
Apparently not.
All right. We lost Vera. Okay. Alan, anything else you want to say on that?
No. The only question for many of us is how crazy Trump is going to be. If, in fact, he believes he'll be held criminally responsible after he loses and might, in fact, go to jail. Because there are a lot of the cases that cannot be brought because he's a sitting president,
right.
he would stop at nothing. Do I believe this is a man who will stop at nothing? Yes, I do. So I agree with those columnists that Malcolm is citing right now. And I think this is a precursor, as I've been saying all along, to totalitarianism, period. Mm.
Vera, I believe you're back. Yes.
Yeah, I'm back. Sorry, I temporarily disconnected for some reason. So my thought was, I just sort of look at some of these things that are happening in this country, and I have these regular conversations with my family in Germany, and we're just astounded by this step-by-step attempt to undermine and weaken basic democratic principles here. I mean, we find it increasingly shocking, and we have conversations about that, how that parallels some of the strategic choices made in Germany in the late 20s and early 30s.
Is there a sense of that? In other words, I was just about to interrupt you when you said it, and I think that's so interesting. Here you have the German people. Certainly they're in touch with their history. And know what the precursor to what happened with Hitler was. I get criticized for comparing Trump to Hitler all the time. Today I got a letter saying, you're crazy, Alan. He's not like Hitler. He didn't kill all of those Jewish people. That's not the point. The point is, how did he subvert the government and the governmental process? So Vera, I guess the question for you is, What is the awareness in Germany of the way in which this is coming down? In other words, is it happening again, and do people, because of their history, sense it?
Well, what I have a conversation about with my siblings, for example, is this sense, this growing sense of insecurity and this effort to have the government speak about order and control and the right to authority, whereas people who protest or express a different position are classified as, the seditionists, the terrorists, the criminals. It's sort of this broad stroke approach to stir up insecurity. And if you want a country where you have safety and protection, you must rely on the government. And then the sort of use of propaganda to identify types of people who are less worthy, or the ones, if they die, we don't care about from certain states, or ethnic groups or racial groups that are worth less and their opinions don't matter as much because they live in certain places or urban environment. This is the use of incitement against ethnic and religious groups in this country,
I get all of that. I'm asking a very specific question, which is, the grandparents of many of the people who are living in Germany now went through this. The Germans are in touch with their history. Do they see a parallelism with Trump now and what he's doing in this country, in our country?
Increasingly so. People are deeply concerned. What makes them also establish the parallel is that we have enormous numbers of Americans dying of COVID and nobody seems to care in this administration. I mean, I hold the Trump administration responsible for enormous amounts of deaths among populations in this country because they did not advance policies that would support basic principled public health policies. And that is a parallel also to how a neo-Nazi regime gains power. I mean, there are these sort of increasing parallels I would point to.
Malcolm, anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah,
In fact, I speak to a friend from Germany almost every day. And last week I did an hour-long Zoom presentation with Democrats abroad in Europe. And one of the presenters is married to a German. They cannot believe the United States has lost its mind. That's the collective wonderment that's going on in Germany. And this one person who I speak to almost daily is the daughter of an older German who was brought into the military when he was 47. He was a butcher under Hitler, and they see the parallels. And what they're afraid of is the biggest fear that they have in Germany is Trump is actually pushing the Germans who like neo-Nazism, like AfD, Alternative for Deutschland, and pushing them into a place where the United States had taken them out of over 70 years. So they're seeing this fresh growth of neo-Nazis in the military in Germany, and they love Trump on the far right inside Germany. And the Germans are coming out to being better Americans than we are.
So the anti-masker mobilization, right, that happened in Berlin a couple of weeks ago, the protesters, they were completely inspired by the Trump administration.
And QAnon.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, we just have about 2 minutes left, so I want to read two letters and also mention that New York City schools again are delaying the start of in-person classes for most students. They have made the announcement that they'll phase students back into classrooms starting with the youngest children who will report next week. So that is making news this morning, as well as we continue with this issue of how to send our kids back to school if and when and how Lorraine writes, I'm surprised that all of you are not seeing how we're all being played. This is a distraction from Bob Woodward's book. This is how he rolls. He gets everyone crazy to distract. But it's all, I mean, it's all chaos. It's all, I don't know. It's all a distraction.
But it's all interconnected.
Yeah, it is. It is. Judy says, those of us in native, I have to dismiss this appointment and then I can read the letter. Those of us in Native America have been taught by our parents and ancestors that there is no justice where the dominant culture is unjust. Our ancestors were called savages and treated worse than anything you are talking about today. Just check Native American history after contact. We then end on this note from Leslie, who's saying postponing the election will just make Nancy Pelosi president. Alan, your thought on that?
Well, I don't believe that the election is going to be postponed, so I'm not buying the premise, and as Johnny Carson said, not buying the gag.
Yep.
I just don't. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it'll be allowed to happen if he tries it. There will be hell to pay. And remember that the states still have a great deal to do with the election law in the United States. I just don't think it's going to happen.
All right. We are out of time. Hopefully we haven't all depressed you too much. We've tried to figure out and maybe have an hour and a half support group together and figuring out what's going on. We'll try to be in better spirits tomorrow. We don't promise anything, but we'll try. Alan, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe.
Vera Acarius-Kelly, Malcolm Nance, thank you. And again, thanks to Linda for being with us earlier in the program. Great to have you all here. We will return right after this.